All right. Good morning, everybody. This is Bio 231. It's October 29th, which means what? Which means that our next meeting is going to be on Halloween, the 31st. That's what that means. Okay, and then it's November. So we still got two more lectures in October. And if I look at the schedule on the right-hand slide, I see the 29th, we're going to cover autonomic nervous system. That's chapter 15 today. And special senses next time. And then next week, we have a couple lab practicums. Practicum 3. All right. And then the week after that, there's going to be a holiday on Monday. And we're going to hold class on Wednesday, November 14th. And that's going to be your third exam on that date. So that's on a Wednesday. All right. So next week, we got practicums. The week after is a short week because of Veterans Day. And that's when the third exam is. And then the class is 75% done at that point in time. All right. So we got to move right along. Any questions on the schedule? No questions on the schedule? Sounds good. So I'm going to turn some of these lights down. Maybe turn the microphone up just a little bit. I want that light on, I want that light off, and I want that light off, and these lights off. Okay, so we're changing our attention from peripheral nervous system to the autonomic nervous system. And the autonomic nervous system, as a matter of fact, you might want to open up your notes from the very first lecture we had on nervous system that has a diagram of all the different parts of the nervous system. It'd be really handy to look at that. So we're going to look at the motor division. And remember, the motor division could be broken down into somatic versus autonomic. And somatic means it's going to go to skeletal muscle. So that nervous system is involved with voluntary control of functions in your body. And what kind of effector organs do you have voluntary control of in your body? What's the list? Skeletal muscle is number one. Anything else? No, they're trying to trick you. That's it. Okay, there is no list. It's just one thing. The only thing you can control voluntarily is skeletal muscle. Everything else is controlled by the autonomic nervous system autonomically or automatically, or it's self-governing with the autonomic nervous system. But nonetheless, you should still know what the effector organs are for the autonomic nervous system. Now, that one, there is a list. The list has three items in it. And what are the three items that can be controlled by the autonomic nervous system? Can't be a skeletal muscle. But it's probably some kind of muscle. What kind of muscle? Smooth muscle. Yeah, smooth muscle is involuntary. Cardiac muscle and glands as well. So those are the three effector organs that the autonomic nervous system controls. All right, in so doing, the autonomic nervous system regulates such things as blood pressure, heart rate, digestion, respiration, urination, sweating, pupil dilation, and hundreds of other functions that we don't have to think about in our daily life because it's automatically controlled by controlling smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and glands. All right, so I want to compare the autonomic outflow pathway for somatic nervous system, which is voluntary, versus autonomic. And here is a nice slide, 15.2, that kind of compares the outflow pathways. So we see two main areas on this table. The top one is the somatic nervous system, somatic meaning it's going to skeletal muscle. And then the bottom table down over here is the autonomic nervous system. And let's take a look at the difference in some of these structures. All right, so I see a nice neuron right here for somatic nervous system, and it's a nice multipolar neuron. And the cell body for this cell is in the spinal cord. And here is the axon that's leaving the spinal cord. It's going to leave a root of the spinal cord. Does anybody know what root leaves the spinal cord to go to the periphery? Okay, I tell you what. Who knows? How many roots are there? There are two. Yeah, there are two. And what are they? The ventral root and the dorsal root. And what root is motor, meaning taking signals out of the central nervous system? Yeah, that's the ventral root. So here is a neuron that's going to leave the ventral root, and this nice axon is really, really long. It goes all the way to the effector organ. In this case, is a skeletal muscle. And you can see it's a nice myelinated nerve fiber, which means that what kind of conduction is taking place on this axon? saltatory conduction. That means it's fast, it's skipping from node of Ranvier to node of Ranvier. And the other thing that is shown on this diagram is that it requires only one neuron to go all the way from the central nervous system, which is this color right here, cell bodies in the central nervous system, all the way to the effector organ. One neuron travels that whole distance. And what do we call that junction of communication between cells? What's the structural and functional unit of communication between cells called? Yeah, that's a synapse, okay? And in particular, the neuromuscular junction, or the synapse between the neuron and the skeletal muscle, is a chemical synapse, which means then a chemical signal has to be transferred from the neuron to the skeletal muscle to get it excited, right? So anytime that signaling molecule is released, that's going to be excitatory on the muscle, and the muscle is going to contract. It can never make up its own mind what it wants to do. Otherwise, you wouldn't have voluntary control over it. And that signaling molecule is what generally we call a neurotransmitter, and specifically the name of that transmitter at the neuromuscular junction for the somatic nervous system is ACH, which stands for, anybody know? Acetylcholine. That's right. So acetylcholine is a specific name of a neurotransmitter that has to diffuse across the synaptic cleft and bind to receptors on this muscle right here to cause it to contract. All right, so this is the scheme for the somatic nervous system. There's never an exception to that. One neuron all the way from the CNS to the effector organ. Let's contrast that with the autonomic nervous system. Okay. So all of these show the autonomic nervous system, and I see the nerve cell body in the central nervous system, and it's going to leave through the ventral root, just like the somatic motor neuron. But now does this single neuron go all the way to the effector organ, like smooth muscle or cardiac muscle or various glands? No, it stops on the way there. So here is the axon terminus, and then it requires a second neuron to go the rest of the way. So you should be able to tell me how many neurons does it take to have autonomic outflow from the central nervous system all the way to the effector organ. It requires two. What about for the somatic nervous system? One, okay, that we see up in the top table right there. Okay, so this junction between the two neurons is what we call a ganglion. And a ganglion is a group of nerve cell bodies and dendrites someplace in the peripheral nervous system. So there's an accumulation of thousands or tens of thousands of nerve cell bodies, so it forms a little nodule in different parts of your body that we call a ganglion. And this is the junction between these two neurons. And what do we call this junction, this structural and functional unit of communication between these two neurons? That's a synapse. That's right. So this first neuron is what we call the presynaptic neuron. The second one is what we call the postsynaptic neuron. The postsynaptic neuron has the cell bodies in the ganglion someplace, and the cell body of the presynaptic neuron is in the central nervous system someplace. Okay, so this again is a chemical synapse. So a neurotransmitter has to be released by the presynaptic neuron, which then will excite the postsynaptic neuron. And that neurotransmitter, just as in the neuromuscular junction, okay, is always going to be acetylcholine. All right, so the presynaptic neuron or the preganglionic neuron is releasing acetylcholine. So sometimes we call this the preganglionic neuron, and the postsynaptic neuron sometimes we call the postganglionic neuron, right? Preganglionic, postganglionic. The preganglionic neuron always releases acetylcholine. All right, and it requires two neurons. Okay, I'm going to come back to this slide in just a little bit. Okay, so somatic requires one neuron, autonomic always requires two. So you should be able to answer some of these questions. What's the effector in the somatic voluntary pathway? So here's a good question for you. What's the effector organ in the somatic voluntary pathway? You see it on this slide right here. It is skeletal muscle. Okay. What are the effectors in the autonomic or visceral motor pathway? We see them right here. Smooth muscle, cardiac muscle, and also glands. And these are under involuntary control. All right. Let's talk about control system architecture for a second. There's something that's called tonic control, This describes a system where there is just a single effector that can be adjusted on or off, or maybe up or down. Okay, and a good example of that would be the gas pedal to control your speed in your car. Now, would that be good for you to control your car with just a gas pedal? No, you could go faster or faster, or maybe not so fast or really fast, and then you could crash. All right, so tonic control is not a very good system for precise control and balance of a system. What is important is to have antagonistic control. That describes a system where there are two subsystems that work in opposition to each other. So that's why we call it antagonistic. All right, so not only can they be turned on or off, but they can be turned a little bit up or a little bit down, and they work in opposition to each other. And a good example, again, in your car would be the gas pedal and your brake pedal. You have to have both in order to have precise control and balance of the speed of your car. Right? And only antagonistic control systems can ensure precise control and balance under most conditions. So the autonomic nervous system is set up that way as well. It has a gas pedal and a brake pedal. Right? There are two divisions, and they are antagonistic to each other. The two divisions in the autonomic nervous system, number one is the parasympathetic, and the second is the sympathetic. So there are two divisions. You can look at that first slide once again. Okay, so that takes us back to this nice figure over here. That's why under the autonomic nervous system, even though they're the same three effector organs, there are two main divisions, the sympathetic division and the parasympathetic division. And how could you describe the relationship of the sympathetic to parasympathetic nervous system to somebody? Maybe just in one word. They are antagonistic to each other. Okay? It's not that the sympathetic will always be excitatory and the parasympathetic will be inhibitory. You just know that they're going to be opposite each other. And we'll try to figure out a way how to visualize that. Okay. The other thing, there is something that's similar between the sympathetic and parasympathetic. Since it's an autonomic outflow pathway, it always requires a preganglionic fiber and a postganglionic fiber to get to the effector organ. Except there's one glaring example, exception to that rule, that we're going to cover in just a little bit. All right, so we talked about the sympathetic outflow pathway. Here's the preganglionic fiber, here's the postganglionic, and the neurotransmitter at the ganglion is acetylcholine. Now, the postganglionic fiber releases a neurotransmitter on these effector organs, but it is no longer acetylcholine. It is what we call norepinephrine, just abbreviated NE. Okay, and there's another related compound called epinephrine, and epinephrine you're kind of familiar with because it runs around with another name called adrenaline. So adrenaline and epinephrine are exactly the same compound. Norepinephrine and noradrenaline are exactly the same compound, but you might not have even have heard of noradrenaline. Maybe you have, I'm not so sure. So the preganglionic fiber in an autonomic pathway releases acetylcholine, but the neurotransmitter for the postganglionic fiber in the sympathetic nervous system is norepinephrine. All right, let's compare this with the parasympathetic nervous system. Again, it requires two neurons. So there's a preganglionic and a postganglionic neuron. The neurotransmitter in the ganglion released by the preganglionic fiber is acetylcholine, just like for the sympathetic nervous system, just like for the neuromuscular junction. Okay, but now, the postganglionic fiber for the parasympathetic nervous system, unlike the sympathetic nervous system that releases norepinephrine, releases acetylcholine. Okay, so you should be able to see that big difference right here. All right, there's a couple other differences between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system that is kind of illustrated on this diagram. And that is, the preganglionic fiber is always myelinated. I can see some Schwann cells. On this preganglionic fiber for parasympathetic, I can see Schwann cells. All right, so these are fast myelinated fibers, but the postganglionic fiber is not myelinated. These are relatively slow fibers as a result of that, slow nerve fibers. All right, so the preganglionics are myelinated, the postganglionics are not myelinated. The other thing that you might notice is the length of these neurons. The preganglionic fiber for the sympathetic nervous system is relatively short, while the length of the parasympathetic preganglionic fiber is relatively long. You see the difference in length? Which then means that the postganglionic fiber for sympathetic outflow is relatively long, and the postganglionic fiber for the parasympathetic nervous system is really short. As a matter of fact, it's really dinky, because this ganglion is right inside the effector organ. Well, this ganglion is very close to the vertebral column or the spinal cord. So there's a difference in myelination, there's a difference in fiber lengths. All right, I want to talk about this difference, or this one exception, in the sympathetic outflow pathway. And it's illustrated on this line right here. And I see the preganglionic fiber. All right, the cell body's in the central nervous system. It leaves through the ventral root. And this fiber goes all the way to the adrenal gland, and in particular, the deep part of the adrenal gland, which is what we call the adrenal medulla. The medulla of any organ is the deep part. Anybody remember what the superficial part of an organ is called? That's the cortex. So the adrenal gland has a cortex and a medulla, vastly different organs. All right, but right now, we're considering the adrenal medulla. When the preganglionic fiber stimulates the adrenal medulla, these cells, right, these are acting like the postganglionic cell. They don't transmit electrical impulses like this postganglionic fiber does in the line right above. These cells automatically release hormones into the circulatory system. And those hormones are epinephrine and norepinephrine. This norepinephrine is exactly the same norepinephrine that's released by this postganglionic fiber in the line above. All right, and when norepinephrine and epinephrine enter the blood, where do these signaling compounds go? Everywhere where the blood goes, everywhere in your body. So it carries that sympathetic signal everywhere in your body to all of these effector organs. So when we think of the sympathetic nervous system, we think of a concept called mass activation. The whole sympathetic nervous system becomes activated at one time. Not only because sympathetic neurons go everywhere in the body, but because these signaling compounds, epinephrine and norepinephrine, are released from the adrenal medulla and they travel everywhere in the body carrying that sympathetic signal. Okay. That's not so with the parasympathetic nervous system. The parasympathetic nervous system is more discrete. It can go to one organ, but not another, not a neighboring organ. The sympathetic nervous system just becomes activated as a unit. Okay, and we see that the effect of somatic outflow is always going to be excitatory. Skeletal muscle will always contract. But because of the antagonistic nature of the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system, sometimes that autonomic outflow is excitatory or stimulatory, and sometimes it's inhibitory. Right, and that's how we always understand the relationship between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. All right, so let's look at the word slide over here. Where do we find some of these things? The parasympathetic nervous system. All right, let me look at this chart right here. I like that. I like that. Oh, that's even better. Okay, parasympathetic nervous system. All right, so here's a review question. How many nerves does it take to get from the central nervous system all the way to an effector organ for the parasympathetic nervous system? Two, right? A preganglionic and a postganglionic fiber. What's the neurotransmitter between those two neurons? Acetylcholine. Always acetylcholine. Okay, but parasympathetic signals cannot leave the central nervous system throughout the whole brain and spinal cord. Remember, there are 12 cranial nerves, 31 spinal nerves. It can only leave in a couple areas. And these areas are from cranial nerves and from sacral nerves. So parasympathetic outflow is what we call craniosacral because it leads through a few cranial nerves and through a few sacral nerves. Right? And this is what's shown on the slide on the right. So parasympathetic is designated with, oh, it looks like a blue color to me. Does that look blue to you? Purple? Blue. Good. So parasympathetic outflow is diagrammed in blue on this diagram. And you can see the brain right here. Here you can see the spinal cord. Do you see any blue nerves leaving the spinal cord in the cervical region? What about thoracic region? What about lumbar region? No, only the sacral region plus some of these cranial nerves right here. So therefore, we say parasympathetic outflow is craniosacral outflow. Okay. The other thing that I see on this diagram is that it requires two neurons to get from the central nervous system all the way to an effector organ like this salivary gland. Here is the preganglionic fiber in a nice solid dark blue. Here's the ganglion, that's the junction between the pre- and postganglionic fiber. And then here is the short postganglionic fiber. And when we look at the heart or the lung, look how small that postganglionic fiber is. It's very, very small. Okay, and that's the non-myelinated neuron. The preganglionic is the myelinated neuron. All right, so cranial nerve number 10, we call that the vagus nerve. It goes to most of the body and carries parasympathetic activity to the heart, the lungs, and the liver, and the digestive tract. Okay, as shown on this diagram. And since it wanders around everywhere in the body, cranial nerve number 10 is called the vagabond nerve. And in anatomy, what's vagabond? That is the vagus nerve. Right, so that you might help remember the name of cranial nerve number 10, that's the vagus, because it just kind of wanders around all over the place. All right, so parasympathetic is craniosacral outflow. And the ganglion is near or in the target organ, so the postganglionic fiber is very short. We call these terminal ganglia, the ones that are right on the target organ themselves. All right, so what are some of the effects? I'm not going to have you memorize all of the effects of the autonomic nervous system, but here are some that you should memorize for sure because they're in your notes. Parasympathetic activity decreases heart rate. Okay, but it is, so it's inhibitory on the heart. It slows the heart down, but for digestion, it is excitatory. Parasympathetic outflow stimulates digestive processes, both in motility and secretion of enzymes into the digestive tract. So you can't always say the parasympathetic is inhibitory, right? What is the thing, only thing you can say is that if the parasympathetic is inhibitory, like it is on the heart, what's the effect of the sympathetic nervous system on the heart? It's going to be excitatory because they're antagonistic to each other, okay? So we see that parasympathetic inhibits digestion, and I'm sorry, up arrow means it stimulates digestion. What's the effect of the sympathetic nervous system on digestion? It's going to be inhibitory because these two divisions are antagonistic to each other. All right. The other thing you notice here is that parasympathetic inhibits respiration and parasympathetic causes pupil constriction. That means the pupils of your eyes get really, really small. As, for instance, if you're going to be in bright light. The other thing is, for parasympathetic, the preganglionic neurotransmitter is acetylcholine, as well as the postganglionic neurotransmitter. You saw that on one of the previous slides. All right, and if a neuron secretes acetylcholine as a neurotransmitter, we call that a cholinergic neuron, if it releases acetylcholine. All right, so I got a question here. Are the pre- and postganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system cholinergic or adrenergic? Oh, I didn't tell you what adrenergic means. I got to tell you what adrenergic means. Adrenergic means that it's a neuron that releases epinephrine or norepinephrine, if it's an adrenergic neuron. Okay, so what kind of neurons are the pre- and postganglionic fibers of the parasympathetic nervous system? They are cholinergic, that's right, because they release what neurotransmitter? Acetylcholine. So that makes pretty easy sense. All right, so how would you describe How would you tell me how to find the cursor? Ah, here it is. Okay. How would you describe the difference between the pre- and post-ganglionic neurons of the parasympathetic nervous system? If we look at this chart right here, we could describe them in terms of the neurotransmitter that they secrete, which is what? Both are acetylcholine, so both the pre- and post-ganglionics are cholinergic. Okay. One fiber is myelinated and the next is not. Which one is myelinated? Yeah, the preganglionic fiber is myelinated, the post is non-myelinated. Which one is long? The preganglionic fiber is really long, the postganglionic fiber is relatively short as a result of that. So that's how I would compare and contrast the pre- and postganglionic fibers in the parasympathetic nervous system. All right, so we're halfway done. I must be talking too fast. Okay, since we're halfway done with the autonomic nervous system and we're done with the parasympathetic, what does that leave us with? The sympathetic nervous system. Okay, so let's turn our attention to the sympathetic nervous system. All right, the cell bodies are in the spinal cord, the gray matter of the spinal cord, and especially the lateral horn of the gray matter of the spinal cord. Maybe I could, we'll have to open up a different view in order for you to see. All right, I want to show you this slide. All right, so here are the cell bodies in the spinal cord. And notice, all of these cell bodies are not located in the brain. They're not in the cervical region. They're not in the sacral region right here. Where do we find the cell bodies for sympathetic outflow? In the thoracic region and the lumbar region, down to L2. So from T1 to L2, is everybody familiar with that terminology? T1 is what, the first thoracic vertebrae, L2 is the second lumbar vertebrae. This is how all sympathetic outflow leaves the central nervous system, and as a result, we say that sympathetic outflow is thoracolumbar in nature. Okay, now let's contrast that with the parasympathetic. What did we say for parasympathetic? It was craniosacral outflow. So it's interesting that these two different nervous systems exit through two drastically different parts of our central nervous system. Okay, and the sympathetic nerve fibers are drawn in what color? I don't know. What color is that? Green. Okay, I was going to say orange. Okay, but green is good. All right, so, and the dark green represents the preganglionic fiber. The light green, and indeed, did it just turn light or is it a different color? A light green. The light green is the postganglionic fiber. And then in between the preganglionic and postganglionic, this is where we have the ganglia, right? The synapse between the pre- and postganglionic fibers. And for sympathetic outflow, there are something that looks like an auxiliary spinal cord to me. On either side of the spinal cord, on either side of the vertebral column, there is something we call the sympathetic chain ganglia that are connected together, and it looks like a spinal cord, but only for sympathetic outflow, only for sympathetic activity, which is what? Not somatic and not parasympathetic. So here we see the sympathetic chain ganglia, and sometimes the preganglionic fiber enters the sympathetic chain ganglia and it synapses so that the postganglionic fiber leaves the sympathetic chain. At other times, the preganglionic fiber passes straight through the sympathetic chain on its way to the effector organ. But remember, it takes two neurons, right, to get to the effector organ. So here's the preganglionic and here's the postganglionic. This right here is not a sympathetic chain ganglia. This is what we call the prevertebral ganglia. So sympathetic chain ganglia are on either side of the spinal cord. And since they're on either side, sometimes we call these the paravertebral ganglia because they're on either side, right and left of the spinal cord. Right, but these are going to be in front. So since they're in front, we call these the prevertebral ganglia. Nonetheless, right, in most cases, 99% of the time, there has to be a ganglion someplace. The preganglionic fiber is relatively short, and the postganglionic fiber is relatively long, again, contrasting with the parasympathetic nervous system. All right, now what can you tell me about the neurotransmitter for the preganglionic fiber, for the sympathetic nervous system? I know there's a lot of categories you got to think of there. So here's the preganglionic fiber. It's going to stimulate or it's going to control the postganglionic fiber by releasing a neurotransmitter because this is a chemical synapse. What's the name of the neurotransmitter right here? Acetylcholine. So the preganglionic fiber is cholinergic. All right, but the postganglionic fiber, remember, is adrenergic because what's the neurotransmitter that's released by the postganglionic fiber? It is norepinephrine. It is no longer acetylcholine. So that's a nice difference between the pre- and postganglionic fibers in the sympathetic nervous system, but also a nice difference between the sympathetic and parasympathetic nervous system. Okay, so what are some of the effects of the sympathetic nervous system? Well, we saw that parasympathetic, yeah? Over here? Okay, same thing as for the parasympathetic. So the preganglionics are myelinated, the postganglionics are non-myelinated. Yep, that's the same. Pretty good question. Okay, what about heart rate? Anybody remember for parasympathetic nervous system? What's the effect of parasympathetic nervous system on the heart? And specifically due to that vagus nerve, cranial nerve number 10. It's inhibitory, slows the heart rate down. But you should have good control of your heart rate. Just like you should have good control of the speed in your car, right? So not only should there be the parasympathetics that slow the heart down, there should be sympathetics that do what? Speed the heart up, increase the heart rate. So sympathetic nervous system increases heart rate, antagonistic to the parasympathetic. And you notice for digestion, the sympathetic nervous system decreases motility and secretions in the digestive tract, which is antagonistic to the parasympathetic. Right, sympathetic also increases respiration, while the parasympathetic decreases respiration. And pupils dilate under sympathetic stimulation. They get bigger, so it lets more light into the eyes. Right, and most postganglionic neurotransmitters, norepinephrine, there's a few examples where acetylcholine can be found, but that's not so important for this class. Okay, it's mostly going to be norepinephrine. All right, so how would you describe the difference between the pre- and postganglionic neurons of the sympathetic nervous system? So here we see sympathetic nervous system. What can you tell me about the preganglionic fibers? They're short, postganglionics are long. Preganglionic fibers are myelinated, postganglionic fibers are non-myelinated. One last thing, the preganglionic fibers release what kind of neurotransmitter? Acetylcholine, so they're cholinergic, but the postganglionic fibers, most of them release norepinephrine, so these are adrenergic fibers. Okay, so those are good ways to contrast the pre- and postganglionic fibers in the sympathetic nervous system. Okay, there's only one exception to this rule, and that is when sympathetic signals go to the adrenal gland. So here's a kidney, just kind of hanging out in space, but that should be tucked away in your body someplace. We're going to see where that is in a little bit. And on top of the kidney is the suprarenal gland. Suprarenal means on top, and another way of saying suprarenal is saying adrenal. Here are the adrenal glands. So the renal glands are the kidneys, adrenal are the ones above it. And this preganglionic fiber goes all the way to the inside of the adrenal medulla, and it stimulates these cells, which we call chromaffin cells, to release norepinephrine and also some epinephrine directly into the circulatory system. So there really isn't a strict, perfect postganglionic fiber in this outflow pathway. It's just the cells of the adrenal medulla that are modified postganglionic cells. Okay, I want to talk about some other things. Let me go back. All right, so what kind of outflow? Well, before I leave this slide, what kind of outflow is sympathetic activity? It's called thoracolumbar for sympathetic outflow. What about for parasympathetic? It was craniosacral. So maybe you can visualize those colors or something for you to remember that. All right, so I want to stick with sympathetic outflow pathways. And here is a preganglionic fiber leaving the spinal cord. And this is going to be, remember, in the thorax region, thoracic region, or L1 and L2. And here is the ventral horn. Here's the dorsal horn of gray matter of the spinal cord. And in those regions, there is also a lateral horn, because that's where the cell bodies for the sympathetic nervous system are. So only the thoracic and lumbar regions have these lateral horns. There are no lateral horns in the cervical region or the deeper, the more distant levels of the lumbar region. So here's the cell body, and it leaves this root. What root is this right here? This is the ventral root. Okay, so this is a nice myelinated fiber. Okay, and it enters the spinal nerve. It goes into this ramus that's going to go to an anterior part of the body, but before it goes to an organ, it deviates into the sympathetic chain ganglia that we see right here. And it enters via what we call the white ramus communicantes, because this is a nice myelinated fiber. Okay, and in this particular case, it passes right through the sympathetic chain, going to a collateral or prevertebral ganglia someplace. And then here is the postganglionic fiber going to some smooth muscle and some intestines. All right, so you can see some sympathetic chain ganglia right here. Let's maybe take a little bit more encompassing view of sympathetic outflow. All right, so I see a nice vertebral column right here. I see a diaphragm. All right, so what level of the vertebral column is... do I have my cursor kind of hovering over right here? Yeah, it's a thoracic region, and then lumbar is down in this region. So here is the vertebral column, and on either side of the vertebral column, I see like a string of pearls. Those are what we call the sympathetic chain ganglia, right? On either side of the spinal cord, these act like a special little spinal cord for sympathetic outflow activity. So the sympathetic chain ganglia is here and here, so sometimes this chain of them, we call it the sympathetic chain. All right, so the preganglionic neuron synapses in this ganglia sometimes, but other times it passes straight through and it goes to ganglia that are positioned right anterior to the vertebral column. So these right here are what we call the prevertebral ganglia. So sympathetic ganglia could be in the sympathetic chain, right, or the prevertebral ganglia. Sometimes we call these collateral ganglia as well. Okay, so you can see the sympathetic chain ganglia. Here is another view of the sympathetic chain ganglia. And again, these are going to be in the thoracolumbar region. And here's the ventral root. So a preganglionic fiber is going to leave the ventral root, then down through this white ramus communicantes, because it's a myelinated fiber, going into the sympathetic chain. And if it synapses here, the postganglionic fiber is going to leave to re-enter the spinal nerve to find its way to the effector organ. Now, what can you tell me about the postganglionic fiber that's leaving the sympathetic chain in terms of its state of myelination? I can see it right here. Should be a different color than this one. That's gray. And it's gray because it's what? It's a non-myelinated nerve. All right, so here's the white ramus communicante for the preganglionic fiber. When it leaves the sympathetic chain, it goes back out this thing. This is the gray ramus communicantes. And then that same nerve fiber, the axon, rejoins the spinal nerve, and that spinal nerve takes it to its particular effector organ someplace. All right, so that's a very common kind of flow. And remember, what root is this in the back? Dorsal root, and what the heck is this bulge right there? That's the dorsal root ganglia for sensory fibers, for information entering the central nervous system. Remember, the ventral root is for leaving, the dorsal root is for entering, and this part of the nerve is in the peripheral nervous system. It contains the cell bodies of sensory nerves, which are those pseudo-unipolar nerves or unipolar nerves, and the cell bodies all exist in this little node right here that we call the dorsal root ganglion. All right, and this is a ganglion, the sympathetic trunk ganglion, because it's in the peripheral nervous system as well. It's not in the spinal cord. Okay? It's outside the spinal cord and brain, so it's part of the peripheral nervous system. Okay, a couple other things that I want to mention. Well, let's go over this scheme first, and I'll mention some other things. All right, so we see the dorsal horn and the ventral horn. Here's a lateral horn, again, in the thoracolumbar region, which has a cell body for sympathetic outflow, and then the sympathetic preganglionic fiber leaves the ventral root into the spinal nerve. Remember, the function of a spinal nerve is mixed. There's going to be afferent as well as efferent neurons in here, but this is a nice efferent neuron because we're talking about sympathetic outflow. It enters the sympathetic chain ganglia via the white ramus communicantes, and it synapses, and the postganglionic fiber leaves at exactly the same level, re-enters the spinal nerve to get to wherever its effector organ is going to be. And so here is the gray ramus communicantes. All right, so that's one way that it can take place. Here is a second kind of scheme. All right, so here's the preganglionic fiber leaving the ventral root, entering the spinal nerve, going into the white ramus communicantes, entering the sympathetic chain ganglia. But there it doesn't synapse. It can arise a couple levels. It can go up or it can descend. It can go down through the sympathetic chain before it synapses. That's why the sympathetic chain is there, distributing the signal to many regions in the body where it synapses, and then the postganglionic fiber goes to the effector organ via the spinal nerve. All right, so what do we call this structure right here? For the exiting of the postganglionic fiber from the sympathetic chain into the spinal nerve, the gray ramus communicantes, because this is the postganglionic fiber is not myelinated. All right, so these are important schemes for you to realize. One last one, actually two more. Here is, again, the cell body in the lateral horn, the gray matter of the spinal cord leaves the ventral root, enters the sympathetic chain via the white ramus communicantes right here, but there's no synapse in the sympathetic chain. Okay, but this is still autonomic outflow. How many neurons does it take for autonomic outflow to get from the central nervous system to an effector organ? It requires two. And even though it doesn't synapse in the sympathetic chain, look what we have here. A prevertebral ganglion, or a collateral ganglion in front of the spinal cord, where there's a synapse between the preganglionic and postganglionic fiber. Right? And now this, from the prevertebral ganglia, this postganglionic fiber goes all the way to its effector organ. There's a name of a nerve that connects the sympathetic chain ganglia with a prevertebral ganglia. And these nerves are always going to be called splanchnic nerves. There are a number of different kinds of splanchnic nerves. There's a superior, inferior, mesenteric splanchnic nerve. But I do want you to know a splanchnic nerve is a nerve that carries preganglionic sympathetic nerve fibers from the sympathetic chain to this collateral ganglia or prevertebral ganglia someplace in the body. All right, so splanchnic nerve is always going to do that. Let me show you a couple examples of splanchnic nerves. Ah, I think I passed it by. Ah, here is a preganglionic fiber passing straight through the sympathetic chain, going to a prevertebral ganglia someplace, and so what do we call this nerve fiber right here? That's a splanchnic nerve. Here is another preganglionic fiber passing straight through the sympathetic chain, going to a collateral ganglia or prevertebral ganglia via what kind of nerve? A splanchnic nerve. So a splanchnic nerve just is that route of communication that a nerve takes between the sympathetic chain and the prevertebral ganglia. These are always going to be splanchnic nerves. And look at this third case right here. This is another splanchnic nerve. Okay. So these are all called splanchnic, but they have different names depending on where they are in the body. All right, so the only exception to two neurons, can anybody tell me an exception in an autonomic outflow pathway that does not require two neurons? Okay. What organ is involved with a sympathetic outflow pathway that requires only the preganglionic neuron? And it is this one right here that goes to the adrenal medulla. Look at that nice dark green color. That's a preganglionic neuron. It goes all the way, passes through the sympathetic chain, passes through the ciliated ganglion, which is a prevertebral ganglion. It goes all the way to the adrenal medulla. And remember that these cells of the adrenal medulla are acting like the postganglionic fiber. What can you tell me about these postganglionic fibers right here? What kind of neurotransmitter do they release? For sympathetic outflow, it is norepinephrine, right? So these cells of the adrenal medulla will release the same kind of compounds, namely epinephrine and norepinephrine, right? So these postganglionic sympathetic fibers are adrenergic. These cells of the adrenal medulla are adrenergic as well because they release norepinephrine and epinephrine. They just don't transmit electrical impulses. They just release epinephrine and norepinephrine into the circulatory system directly, which then goes everywhere in the body. Okay. So that's some interesting things about the autonomic nervous system. Okay, let's look at some of these questions right here. Why is the white ramus communicantes, or communicans, white, and the gray ramus communicans gray? Because the white ramus is what? It carries myelinated fibers, and the gray ramus carries non-myelinated fibers. Okay, name the nerve that connects a sympathetic chain with a collateral or prevertebral ganglia. That's the splanchnic nerve, right? That's a splanchnic nerve. And there are a number of different kinds of splanchnic nerves depending on where it is in the body. Okay. The other thing that probably you should know, that the preganglionic fiber, when it enters the sympathetic chain right here, let's see if I can find a nice slide of this. Okay, when the preganglionic fiber enters the sympathetic chain, it could synapse at that same level, or it could arise a division or two, or it can even descend a division or two. That's important. All right, the cells of the adrenal or medulla are innervated by the preganglionic sympathetic neurons. You probably don't have to know this, but from T6 to L1. This is what you should know, though. The cells of the adrenal medulla act as the postganglionic cells when stimulated. And these cells are called chromaffin cells. They secrete both norepinephrine and epinephrine directly into the blood, carrying that sympathetic signal everywhere in the body. All right, here's a good question. What is the general name for the chemicals norepinephrine and epinephrine, which are secreted from the adrenal medulla? I didn't tell you that. Hopefully I can remember. Okay? It's probably in the slide someplace. They're called catecholamines. Norepinephrine and epinephrine, or adrenaline and noradrenaline, are called catecholamines. Is that on this slide? I got a feeling it's not on this slide. That's the general name for those specific neurotransmitters. Okay, probably I wanted to ask, if we look at this outflow pathway here on the slide on the right, here's a preganglionic fiber, okay, and what's the neurotransmitter at this ganglion synapse? Acetylcholine. So this neuron, the preganglionic fiber, is what kind of nerve fiber? Since it releases acetylcholine, it is cholinergic, right? Here's the postganglionic fiber releasing norepinephrine, so this is not a cholinergic fiber, it's an adrenergic fiber, okay? And the two neurotransmitters are catecholamines, norepinephrine and epinephrine. Okay, couple more questions. Are the quasi-postganglionic cells of the adrenal medulla, where are those at? Let's go back. Oh, that's parasympathetic. All right, here's that adrenal medulla. Remember, here's the preganglionic fiber going all the way there. And the adrenal medulla cells are sort of like the quasi-postganglionic cells. All right. Are they nerve cells or endocrine cells? Okay, these cells that release norepinephrine and epinephrine directly into the blood. You know, because they don't transmit electrical impulses, it's not really good to think of them as being neurons. Okay? And anytime you have a gland that secretes something that's picked up by the blood, we call that an endocrine gland. Okay, like that thyroid gland is an endocrine gland. It releases thyroxine that gets picked up by the blood that carries thyroxine everywhere in your body. So these cells of the adrenal medulla, you could think of them as being an important part of the nervous system, but also an important part of the endocrine system. And this is one place where we can see that there is a nice junction or interface between the nervous system and endocrine system. So sometimes we call norepinephrine and epinephrine released by the adrenal medulla as neurohormones, because they have components of acting like a neurotransmitter and a hormone all at the same time. So sometimes we call those neurohormones. And in a lot of classes, sometimes you don't separate the nervous system from the endocrine system. I know we haven't talked about the endocrine system yet, but we will really soon. But in a lot of classes, because of the control that the nervous system and endocrine system has over the body, and in some places it's really hard to separate those two systems out, sometimes we actually study the nervous system and endocrine system as one system in the body, and that's what we call the neuroendocrine system. So if somebody were to ask you, give me an example of the neuroendocrine system, you could say, oh yeah, well, the sympathetic outflow to the adrenal medulla, which then releases epinephrine and norepinephrine directly into the blood. So we have nerve impulses through the sympathetic nerves, but then neurohormones released by the adrenal medulla gland. So that's pretty interesting. Okay, so those are all the slides that I think I wanted to show you. I just want to look over some of these slides a little bit, and then I want to just generally talk about, well, I tell you what, I'll do this first. All right, so what kind of, this one right here, what kind of autonomic outflow pathway do we see on this slide right here? It is craniosacral, so this is what kind? How many divisions are there in the autonomic nervous system? You got two. What are the two divisions? You got parasympathetic and sympathetic. So which one is this right here? Parasympathetic, because it is what? Craniosacral. All right, so how many divisions of the autonomic nervous system are there once again? Oh, here's what I wanted to show you. All right, there are two, right? Parasympathetic in blue and sympathetic in green. And remember, sympathetic outflow is thoracolumbar. Parasympathetic is craniosacral. Okay, the other thing that's sort of interesting that you see on this slide, sympathetic outflow has to pass through the sympathetic chain, which is like an auxiliary spinal cord on either side for purely sympathetic outflow. Okay. All right, so let's think about what some of the effects of the parasympathetic versus sympathetic nervous system are. And maybe I don't have it on this slide right here. Let me call it up. Okay, they're characterized by a couple little terms. And maybe I'll modify this slide right here. I'll put it down over here. So we're talking about which one? Decreasing heart rate is the job of which one? Decreasing is parasympathetic. So if we look up over here, aha, parasympathetic. Yeah, you're right. So parasympathetic can be characterized as the rest and digest nervous system. I spelled it almost right. Okay, nervous system. Okay, while the sympathetic, let's fill this in. We'll make an F right here. This is sometimes what we call the fight and flight, like fly away, nervous system. So this is a really good way to think of these two different nervous systems. All right, so when you're in a restful mood, Like you're not undergoing a lot of activity, and when you're digesting food, what nervous system is predominating of your autonomic nervous system? It is the parasympathetic. And when you're active, especially when you're scared, when you're presented with some kind of threatening circumstance, what nervous system is activated? The sympathetic nervous system. And does this make sense? So for instance, when you're resting, all right, should your heart rate be elevated or should it be slow when you're resting? It should be slow. But when you're running away or getting into a fight, what about your heart rate? It should be fast, right? So again, that kind of underscores the antagonism built into the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous systems. All right, what about digestive processes? When you're presented with maybe a life-threatening circumstance, should blood be going to your brain and your heart and skeletal muscles so that you can deal with that threatening circumstance? Or should blood flow be going to digestive organs to help with digestive processes when you're presented with a life-threatening circumstance? Not to your digestive tract, right? We don't have enough blood in our bodies to go everywhere. Your body has to pick and choose where it goes. And so when you're presented with a threatening circumstance, your body chooses it to go to your brain, to your heart, and to skeletal muscles so you can deal with that threatening circumstance. And it takes it away from your digestive system until a later time, because that's not so important. All right? And that's why when you were young, your mom always told you, when you asked if you could go swimming right after lunch, what did your mom always say? No, you can't. Because, just by culture, we know that when right after a meal, you need blood flow to go to your digestive organs, but if you're exercising, guess where it goes? It gets diverted away from your digestive system to your muscles and your heart, and in that case, that can then cause cramps in your digestive system, and if you're swimming underwater and your stomach muscles cramp up, you might not be able to keep your head above water, right? So that's why your mom always told you that. Okay, so digestion, a nice antagonistic control. Now, what about respiration? When should your respiration be stimulated or excited? When you're facing a threatening circumstance or when you're just resting? A threatening circumstance, right? So that's why the sympathetic nervous system increases respiration, parasympathetic decreases respiration. And then our last example right here, pupil dilation. They can be constricted or dilated. All right, when you're presented with a threatening circumstance, what should your pupils be? Constricted so that you don't see much light, or dilated so you can take in a big picture? Dilated, right. So that's a sympathetic activation causes pupil dilation. So you should be able to maybe remember some of these things without having to memorize this list. And certainly I won't ask you to memorize the list that's in your book. You probably have a nice table in your book. But that's just for your reference. Maybe you could put that in your cell phone. Okay, you don't have to memorize, but this stuff right here you should memorize for the test. Heart rate, digestion, respiration, and pupil dilation. All right, so I'm going to give you a little scenario right now, and you can tell me something about the autonomic nervous system, and in particular, what division of the autonomic nervous system is being activated. Okay, so how many divisions of the autonomic nervous system are there again? There are two, and they are the sympathetic and parasympathetic. Okay, so let's just say later on this afternoon you got to go to work, and maybe you work at Blockbuster, but they're no longer in business. Gee whiz, I got to think of a new example of things. Well, just say they're not out of business. So you're renting DVDs and 8-tracks and VHS tapes to people, okay? And you're working in this store, and you're working all afternoon and into the evening, and nobody comes in because everybody is getting stuff over the internet now. So there you're at work, and you're earning a paycheck, so how do you feel? You feel good because you're earning a salary, and you're not busy taking care of business, so guess what you can do during that time? You can pull out your anatomy textbook, right, and you can read through the anatomy chapters and do some exam figures, right? And so you're earning a paycheck, and what else are you doing? Studying for the exam. So how do you feel? Probably really good. So what nervous system is being activated in you? The parasympathetic or sympathetic nervous system? Parasympathetic. Everything is in control. You're nice and relaxed. Your heart rate is decreased and you're accomplishing a lot. You're earning money and earning good grades on tests and things like that. Okay? And you're not under a lot of stress. All right. So then it gets to be about 11 o'clock at night. You got to close the store. and you didn't have a whole lot of business, so you cash out the register, and all the money you're supposed to have in the register is in there. So, you know, everything balances out really fine, so you don't have to take $20 out of your pocket and put it in there to make up some kind of difference that you made a mistake on during the night, right? And you're ready to go home, and you got paid for that, and you studied during that whole time. What nervous system is being activated? Parasympathetic nervous system. You're nice and relaxed. Okay. All right. Then, so you get your keys out of your pocket, you're ready to go home, and just as you turn to go to the door, all of a sudden all the lights in the neighborhood go off. There's a big power failure. Okay? And so now what's sort of happening? You become a little concerned, right? And so you step outside and it's completely dark outside and you lock the door behind you, and then you turn around to walk to your car in the parking lot that's all dark. And then you realize when you got to work, the parking lot was full and you had to park like two blocks away from the store. Now, how do you feel? It's kind of scared. So what's happening to your heart rate? Okay, it's increasing. What about your respiratory rate? What about your pupil diameter? You're dilating. What about your digestive processes? Well, it's like the last thing in the world your body is concerned about, right? So in the dark neighborhood, you're starting to walk down to your car, and then all of a sudden you hear some footsteps behind you. Okay? Now what happens to your heart rate? Really speeds up. Your pupils are super dilated. What nervous system has become activated? Sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight nervous system, right? But I can't leave you with that excited state, right, because that would be terrible. So just as you get to your car and you put your key in the car, you hit your little clicker, all of a sudden you hear my voice and say, oh, what are you doing out so late at night? So now what nervous system is activated? Your parasympathetic nervous system, because then that threat has completely disappeared and you're nice and safe in your car and you can drive home and you earned a paycheck and all that kind of stuff. So think of those two autonomic nervous systems just like that. Okay, make sure you sign the sign-in sheet.